Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Today's guest is Pradeep. Pradeep is from a small village in Andhra Pradesh called Tekkali. Being from a small town myself, I found his story very inspirational. In today's episode, Pradeep talks about how he came to the US in spite of being born to a relatively poor family in a small village in India. He later talks about how he got introduced to the startup world, how he found his co-founders, how he found his idea and executed to it. He later goes into the specifics of what makes a startup succeed. Is it the idea or is it something else? There's a lot to learn from this episode. Here is my interview with Pradeep. Pradeep, welcome to Breaking the Borders podcast.
Hi, Rohit. Thanks for having me here. Pretty exciting. Yeah,
thanks for being here, Pradeep. So if I was sitting next to a flight, next to you on a flight and ask you, tell me about yourself or what do you do? How do you answer that question?
Yeah, I would start with like my talking about myself in terms of where I come from. I come from a very small family, even by Indian standards, I think you would say like a poor family. My dad was earning like 300 rupees per month when I was in my 10th class. He was a clerk at that time in a small government job.
This was which year?
This was 1994.
1994. Right? So 300 yeah. rupees in 1994 is really not that much, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
So, and he didn't have any assets at the time. So he told me actually that like, if I don't do very well in my 10th class, then, I would have to stay in that place forever. So fortunately I did well. In 10th class, actually I topped in the school as well as in the state.
Before you go to 10th standard, what did that mean? Like when you say that place, is it like a concrete house or is it a shack? Like, what are we talking? I'm curious to know, really.
It's a small, I mean, we did have a nice apartment. It's not an apartment, it's a small house. Like, okay. It's just a two-bedroom house kind of thing.
Okay.
It was in a small village at the time. It is called Tekkali in Andhra Pradesh.
Tekkali, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a small place and my parents, in fact, like, haven't traveled that much, haven't seen any of the outside world outside that.
When you say small village, how small is it? How many people live there or what?
I don't know at the time, like, I mean, by Indian standards, like, even small is like a lot of people, right? Maybe 100,000 at the time or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know if we would call that small.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm from a relatively smaller town and there are 8 lakh people or 800,000 people, and it's not small in your standards. So it was a small village.
Yeah, it was a small village. I think it was, but it was a very good time for me in terms of like, I had nothing else but education. I think in those days, like anyway, parents would push you for like studying hard, right? So I actually like was placed 4th in the state in 10th class.
But how do you get such good education in a small village like Tekkali?
I didn't.
You didn't?
It just happened that I was studying in government high school, actually. A lot of my peers are going to private schools. In fact, I studied in Telugu medium as well. That's the language for Andhra Pradesh.
Yeah.
And I didn't know English, actually, as well. And I didn't know Hindi either at the time. It was that just started me off. Like, I got that rank. I also appeared for the APRJC, the Andhra Pradesh Residential Junior College. I was placed, I think, 7th in the whole state. So I went to Nagarjan Sagar, APRJC Nagarjan Sagar.
So all the preparation for 10th and APRJC was your own efforts?
Yeah, pretty much. In fact, I didn't know actually what I was doing most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was just studying, like, textbooks, that's it, right? And my dad was teaching math at the time, and that's how he used to earn a little more money also.
Okay.
He did his master's MS in math. I used to be very good at math because of that. He taught me a lot of things.
I find it that when someone is from a smaller place and they do well, for example, in studies or something, there is usually a mentor, I find. Was there anyone who was influential in your life at that time?
I think initially it was just my dad. He was a teacher, teaching other people math and science at the time. And, so every day, actually morning, like we used to wake up at 5 a.m. and then around 6 or 7 a.m. or so, like his students would come over, he would teach, and then he'd go to his office around 8 or 9 a.m. And I used to sit with them and I would do like my usual, whatever at the time, 7th, 8th, 9th class textbooks. He was teaching like, I think at the time, like 12th class or so. So it was, he was influential for me at the time. But he also unfortunately didn't know where to send me and what, what coaching center or how to do for IIT, for example, all of that. He didn't know any of that, unfortunately. So I went to Narayan Sagar, and very quickly about life history, right? So in 12th class also, I placed 7th in the state. And so I was doing very well in academia and went to REC Allahabad did my bachelor's there and came to the U.S. In 2001, actually. Mm-hmm. In fact, after Allahabad, I had admission from University of Florida, but I didn't go because I didn't have enough money to, I don't have enough money to survive. So I worked for 1 year in Duke Software Systems and,
In India,
but I was actually sent here for work. Mm-hmm. In those days, I mean, most of the people who worked there for, American companies would come here for like 6 months, 9 months. So I was here for most of 2000 and 2001, early 2001. And then I had enough money as well at the time. But finally I had teaching assistantship also, so I didn't need the money. I joined University of Florida for my master's, for 2 years. Then I realized that actually I really like research and I applied for PhD and went to University of Michigan. 2004 to 2009, I was there in Ann Arbor, Michigan. After that, I joined Docomo Labs for 2 years and VMware for 3 years, finally ContainerX.
Yeah.
So that's a long history, you know.
So talking about your PhD, right? Look, first of all, I should say it's very fascinating to hear about your the beginning years, the formative years of your life.
In fact, I don't think I had said this story to many people other than my wife and my family, right? I don't actually talk about my very early days because I come from a small family, and many times people don't realize, and even I didn't realize that what a privileged education or a non-privileged education, what disadvantage would you have versus the advantages you have with a privileged education. Even like a smaller difference, right? Like if you go to private school when you are in 10th class versus going to like a high school in a small village, mm-hmm. It's a huge difference. And I realize that now. At the time, I didn't see that. Mm-hmm. I was just doing what I could do. That's it. Mm-hmm.
The world was small and your perspective was small, but it was helpful even because you are going at whatever you knew.
Yeah, but I can see that like how with the right guidance and privilege education, it's not necessarily privileged, but it's with the right education, I could have done probably more or other people could do even more. Right?
Yeah. So your classmates from your 10th grade and below,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
What do they do right now? Are you in touch with any of them?
Actually, 10th and below, I am not in touch with anyone other than maybe Facebook, couple of friends once in a while. But from 10th onwards, I've been in touch with many people.
When I go to Kurnool, my hometown, for example, I find it so hard to connect with people I grew up with.
that always happens, right? That you have nothing else, nothing common today. That's what happens, that like you were best buddies and at the time like doing everything together, but now absolutely nothing in common.
Did you have that experience as well when you go back to Tekkali?
Yeah, Tekkali, definitely. I've been there a few times, actually. And my parents have moved to Visakhapatnam. It's a much bigger town in Andhra. Mm-hmm. So clearly now, they see the city and they're also exposed to a lot more. But when I go to Tekkali and Srikakulam is another place close by, It's still exactly the same. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And I just can't relate to it. Mm-hmm. And yeah. The people I meet and all. Yeah.
How many patents do you have while you're doing your PhD?
So during PhD, I applied for maybe 5 or 6 patents, out of which I think 2 are approved now. I'm very proud of my PhD work, obviously.
Yeah. So in your PhD, you had like, you were obviously very smart academically, right? So you seem to have a very high level of accomplishments as a researcher. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I'm sure there are people who have done more than me. There is no doubt. So I think my biggest accomplishment to me is that I've done work which any PhD, like you would go into a narrow topic and look at like it in depth, right? So that's one thing that I have done as well. But I'm more proud of like having exposed to something that would be applied to industry. And I interned at HP Labs 3 times. I was at Microsoft Research as well. And the work I did in those internships is a lot more influential, I would say. I get citations from the papers I wrote from the internships more than the overall thesis work. So I got Best Paper Award for the work I did at Microsoft Research, actually. That's what I feel is more important than like going so in-depth and sometimes esoteric, right? Mm-hmm. People feel that, hey, all these PhD guys are looking at problems that are not really relevant.
Yeah. I mean, I had that feeling too a lot. Like, how are you able to come out of that in a way, right?
it's because of my internships, actually. So in my second year, I mean, I got this opportunity at HP Labs and I went there. I went with the idea that, hey, I know what I want to do kind of thing. Because I was always like, I want to do my own idea kind of thing. But then when I went to the industry, when I was in the research lab, the research lab is still a little detached from the true product industry. But still, like, I could see that the real impact is in like making it work for customers. Right? Mm-hmm. And then you could see the products that HP had, Microsoft had. And that's the turning point. And then I joined Docomo and, again, like as an industry lab, you're still detached. But at VMware, I had like very good exposure to the products.
So after Docomo, you went to VMware?
Yeah. Yeah. So after Docomo Labs, I was at Docomo Labs in Palo Alto for 2 years. I don't know if you know, like how the general telecom companies, so this is a Japanese telecom company. Docomo is the largest one. It's like AT&T in Japan. And they have a research lab in the valley to follow the technology here and help them like maybe implement that in their back in Japan. So I was helping with that. I went to Japan twice and presented in their research conference and so on. But it's still, I felt like it's still detached from like real customer impact. So I joined VMware at the time. In fact, the team I joined, I knew a few people already. They were actually at HP Labs when I was interning, and they came to VMware as well.
You seem like you're a very passionate about the research aspect of it and what impact you had. You liked what you're doing. That's why you extended to a PhD, and you were doing something similar in your corporate world as well. Why entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty interesting. I mean, when I joined PhD, I thought I would become an assistant professor. I you have these ideals, right? Like that, I want to be like Andrew Tenenbaum or like all these big professors.
Who is that again? Can you say that?
Andrew Tenenbaum. He's a famous professor in VU University in Amsterdam.
I see.
He wrote the textbooks on operating systems, and many other textbooks as well. I thought I would be like him. But once I joined Michigan and also when I was at HP Labs and Microsoft, I realized that the biggest impact you can make is through the customers. That's why I kind of moved away slowly from research. Right? I went to the research lab where I thought I had the best of both worlds, but you can't be in both sides. Then I joined VMware. It was a product team, but I was also part of an incubation program, which I joined right after I joined the product team. And that's where I got to this exposed to not just engineering, but like how you go through the full end-to-end cycle of like coming up with an idea, building the prototype and marketing it and even like selling it, right, to customers. So that's when I realized that that's where most of my strengths lie in, like taking it all the way. And I wanted to do that for real. So when I was at VMware, I was part of a program called Accelerate, which was started by Steve Herrod. He was the CTO of VMware at the time. He's also an investor in ContainerX now. So that's how I got started. And I also met with a lot of founders and many advisors in the Valley. And I thought this is the right thing for me. Yeah.
When did you quit your job?
December 2014. So it's been 1.5 years, less than 1.5 years.
Yeah. Do you remember the day you quit your job? Or the day you decided to quit?
Yeah. That's a good question, actually. It's an interesting... I was not at all afraid of quitting it or anything. It's more of like, what would I do and how would I execute all this, right? And definitely, I mean, being a first timer, my approach for that was I'd meet with as many founders as I could, and also finding a co-founder. I think that's the biggest thing. And my co-founder Kiran, he's done 2 startups already. This is his 3rd startup, so I lucked out there. Yeah. And
while you were at VMware and when you're close to quitting your job, you're already trying to find other people.
Yeah. While I was at VMware and like evening or late in the weekends, and I was trying to meet with people, as many as I could, and see like if there is interest in the ideas as well as like also like more. You have to. It's kind of like marriage, right? It's not just about whether you like the same idea as mine, but more of like, do we like hanging out with each other? Can we have beer together? What are your opinions on scaling the company? Yeah, there are so many things to talk about, right? So that way,
What is the most important question you asked, or like, what can you give me an example of something that created a lot of insight with a very simple question that others can reuse?
I wish there is one such thing. But I think one simple question you can ask is, what do you think this company means to you in terms of like four years from now or 5 years from now?
What is it?
Where do you want to take this company kind of thing?
Yeah. No, I was not looking for a magic bullet, like what is one question which gives everything away. I was more looking for an example.
I think example is more of like you want to look into the other person's character. I think to me that was most important, because ideas change, people pivot, you change investors or you figure out where to get money, all that. Mm-hmm. But you're going to stay with your co-founder until the end. So it's again like marriage. It's not about like first looks, or it's not about like whether you can hit it off in one time, right? Mm-hmm. It's more of like in the long term, do you have the same base? Do you agree with each other?
Another guest on the show said, it's not a one-night stand, it's a relationship.
Exactly. That's a much better way to say that. Exactly.
Yeah. So when did you meet your co-founder, Kiran?
Yeah, I met him around September, October, I think, in 2014. So I was about to leave. At the time, I was also talking to other folks in terms of like either joining a very early stage startup or co-founding with someone else. You know? It was very interesting. I didn't know Kiran before that. I got connected through a common friend.
How did you meet him? Was it in a...
Yeah, we just met in a coffee shop. So we got connected through a common friend.
So when you quit, right? Do you remember like the day that you quit? What happened that day?
Yeah, when I quit, I think I also joined as an EAR at Lightspeed. So I took that right after VMware. I had that, I started right after VMware. So I knew that I was going to be an entrepreneur in residence at Lightspeed. So I was very, very excited about like what I was going to do for entrepreneurship. Otherwise, I don't think,
your company, right? So yeah. When you already had this idea, you had a co-founder, and I'm guessing you probably had some early version of your idea back then. Why join another company as an entrepreneur in residence?
So this was not another company. It was the VC firm, Lightspeed.
Okay.
So EAR program, I think, it's not like a real job or anything. You are kind of hanging out at the VC firm and you are employed as a contractor by the VC firm, and they can, so for them, you might be helping them with like some deals or like some due diligence. And in return, you're meeting with the VCs, having discussions about your ideas. It's kind of like an incubation kind of thing, but it's in a slightly different format than how incubators and accelerators work. Here, it's more of like, you know someone at the VC firm and you want, and I was at the time was not sure that I would, like I thought that I would have to spend some time to find my co-founder and also refine my idea. And I thought this is a good way to do that.
How do you get into that program?
It's EAR is generally is not a job that VC firms advertise or anything. It's more through connections. You would connect to a partner at the VC firm. And I met one of the partners in a dinner. And then one thing led to another. And later.
What, how do you get invited to that dinner? What dinner was it?
It's more of like a, so VC firms usually have like a networking kind of dinners. And they, you get invited based on like your connections or maybe like someone mentioned that, hey, this guy is leaving VMware already, or I already left. Mm-hmm. And, maybe this is a good idea to connect and see what, if there is a match in terms of ideas. So VCs and as well as the firms do this all the time. They have networking meetings or meetups. And that might be a good way to like actually approach a VC and talk about your ideas as well.
I see. So you went to one of those events, you connected with a VC and you started as an entrepreneur in residence there.
Exactly.
So yeah. One thing I get asked a lot from the listeners is about the visa. Right. So what
sure.
visa status you had when you were quitting your job that let you take this contractor job and then start your company?
So I have the green card. So I have the permanent residency.
I see. You already had the green card at that time when you were
yes.
quitting.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
But I know that like my co-founder Kiran, when he started his first company, he was on H1, and that's a tricky thing in terms of starting a company, but you can still do it. Two other co-founders, three of them, they started the company. Other two, I think, had the American citizenship, so they could start the company.
I see. Yeah, I should one day talk to Kiran as well. I should interview him on the
sure,
podcast.
Sure. Yeah.
So, what was the initial idea like? So actually, let me give you a disclaimer. I'm not a computer scientist. I'm not in this space at all. I tried to look at the video about ContainerX and I find it very hard to understand. So for someone who is dumb like me, how would you explain?
You're not at all dumb right now.
How would you explain what your company was? Actually, I want to hear about the first version in that time, in early 2015, when you were incubating the idea. Yeah. What was the idea at that time?
Yeah, in fact, the idea we had at the time and what we have implemented is nearly the same. I mean, we're still, of course, just 1 year into the company, but I think we have followed original idea as close to it as possible, right? In terms of containers, right, I think the analogy is that if you take shipping containers, right, in the old days, when you want to ship something, let's say a car to like France or like Europe, right? So you would buy a container of like size of the car. Right? Or if you wanted to send a chair, you would say, buy a container of size chair, right? So that's what people used to do. And that's difficult to transport, right? Each container is of the same different size and shape and so on. So then shipping industry guys realized that, hey, let's make the container exactly the same size and shape and with like certain dimensions, all of that. And it's easy to transport. And then shipping industry like took off, because now you have the same format everywhere. Mm-hmm. So same thing is happening in IT infrastructure. So we used to deploy applications with the different shapes and sizes and color, whatever, right? And they're all deployed in different ways and making it very complicated to manage. And now the container is seen as a format that is kind of like standardized and is like of one size and shape. That is easy to move, easy to manage, And people can put, people being developers can add any applications they like inside the container. So that's the promise of containers. So as a technology, it's been there for a long time. But Docker, one of the companies in this ecosystem, made it very user friendly in terms of like writing better wrappers, making it like a format that is easy to use, as well as like the developer tools, all of that, they made it very easy. Yeah. And it took off.
So if I was a developer, I'm writing code, how does it, what is the difference if I'm writing it on a server versus I'm writing it on a container?
So let's say you write an app and you can deploy it directly on a server, but you'll have to like manage the server operating system, the libraries that it needs, configuration, networking settings, and so on.
But
in a container, that's all hidden. Like there is a nice abstraction where you don't need to worry about what is outside the container. If you're inside, similarly, if you're outside, you don't need to worry about what is inside.
I see. So if I write an app and I want to publish it in Android and iOS, I have to write it for iOS and write it for Android.
Exactly.
But if I write it for a container, the container picks up, the Android and iOS picks up from the container. So it works in both cases.
Well,
something like that.
And hopefully we'll get there actually. But that's a good analogy as well. Like if you write an app for iOS or Android, no one ever worries about how it gets installed on your phone, right? Whether it is iPhone or Google Nexus phone kind of thing, right? So it's kind of similar, but in a server software, we are still doing like snowflakes. Like each software is installed and managed in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So with containers, hopefully some of that goes away.
I see. So in the software world, let's say I have a server, which is similar to an iPhone. And if I write a software for this iPhone, that particular server has a different set of settings.
Exactly.
So when I deploy my software on that server, I have to align to the specifications of that server.
Right.
And there are thousands of
servers. Yeah, there could be. I mean, you run it on AWS cloud, it's one way. If you run it on Azure cloud, it's in a different way. And if you run it on your bare metal server, it's a different way.
Yeah.
So that's where the benefit is. And now about ContainerX. So all that is great, but now you need management platform for these containers, and that's what we are building.
What is a management platform?
So if you look at VMware, right? So VMware built all this for virtual machines, which actually took off like 10, 15 years ago, which made one kind of transition from like going from physical to virtual. Mm-hmm. And management is more about like, how do I like, let's say you are the IT admin and you're managing like three departments who want computers, right? Who want desktops as well as servers. Then you give them a virtual machine. It makes it much easier. You can resize it. You can stop it, suspend it. You can migrate it to a new server. You can put it on the cloud or like on-prem servers and so on. So that's what managing means. Now for containers, similar benefits exist, but the management is still very primitive yet. How do you set up networking for containers? How do you do security? How do you do multi-tenancy and so on?
Yeah.
So our primary differentiation is in like two big things. One is that we do Windows containers. That's one thing very unique. And we also do multi-tenancy for containers, which is not available in other platforms yet.
When you say Windows containers, it is that there are enterprise servers which run Windows software as well. Windows.
Yeah. So Windows containers are still in beta. So Windows Server, Microsoft announced for 2016 it will be released, but it's in beta version right now. But it has support for running apps in containers. So we are leading edge. So we are building our software on top of that.
I see.
And providing customers with like right now, of course, we're still doing beta installs.
Yeah.
And close to GA.
So it's a very specific problem. I'm guessing very well known only to the people inside the industry, much like the place you and I come from, right? So only people around it know. For example, if I say Kurnool, people outside of Andhra don't even know what that place is.
Yeah.
Only people around it know. So as a funny side note, I said that, but when did you come up with this thought or idea as such?
I've been in the virtualization infrastructure for almost a decade now. So this evolved over time. And I mean, I worked on the vCloud vCenter product, which is the VMware's version of management for virtual machines. So when I saw containers and Docker making it easier, I mean, it was pretty clear that like it will, infrastructure also has to evolve. Mm-hmm. And at the time, like 2 years ago, it was not as clear that we need the management platform. Mm-hmm. But people are going towards, hey, containers become the building block. Someone has to manage them. Right? Mm-hmm. So it grew from that. And now I think we have other management platforms, like Docker has their own offering as well.
Yeah. Oh, is Kiran also a very technical guy that he understands the depth of all the issues and problems, or was it more your idea that you?
I think I mean, Kiran is a very technically oriented as well.
I see.
I mean, in his first company, he was coding in Windows kernel and a lot of other things.
So you both understand the problem very well.
Yeah, yeah. But Kiran, he moved to like more product management, as well as I think he started his second company. He was the CEO for that. So he's done a lot more business and operations side of things. So that's one thing I was fortunate to have, that like we have a good combination of like, I needed that help or more complementing that. And definitely Kiran has more business side of things.
Yeah. How do you communicate this to VCs? I'm curious to know.
VCs, I think, so you have to pick the right VCs. That's true for any idea, actually, not just for this. But we pick VCs who are in the enterprise side of the business. Like Steve Herrod from General Catalyst, he funded us. And he was the CTO for VMware. He clearly understands all the problems in enterprise software and infrastructure. So you pick the right set of people, and it pretty much every well-known VC firm has an enterprise VCs as well as consumer business side of VCs as well.
Oh, with VCs in that particular sector, you can go deep and talk about the problems, and they would understand it also. So did you have any competitors when you first got started?
When we got started, it was a lot more muddy than now, I think. At the time, it was not clear like how this container ecosystem will shape up. Docker was clearly like gaining a lot of evangelism in open source. So they made these open source tools for interacting with containers, which was geared towards developers. So Docker was the first one in terms of like evangelizing the whole container concept and how do you like use it to deploy your apps and so on. And then there are a lot of players who saw the opportunity that, hey, containers can be the building block of infrastructure, just like what VMware did for virtual machines. We could be the VMware of containers. And then people started thinking about like different ideas. Mm-hmm. So now at this stage, again, it's coming a little bit of full circle. There were a lot of players, but I think this year it is a year where the technology will be tested in terms of customer adoption. Is it a real technology or is it just like a niche technology kind of thing?
I see. What was the first few months of building the company ContainerX was like?
First few months, Kiran and I, we would meet and brainstorm quite a bit. We had this top level VMware for containers kind of idea, right? VMware vSphere is the product for containers. And so we would dig into the details, like what does that mean? What features should we provide? How are we unique? How do we compete with customers, other companies? And how do we get to customers, and what is the right market segment, and so on.
Yeah. So it was mostly, brainstorming. When did you first starting to like develop?
I did the prototype as well. Okay. We had a prototype even when we pitched to the VCs early last, 2015. And the prototype, it was showing main unique aspects of like Windows containers, for example. And it was just to show that this is where our differentiation will be, and these are the advantages for customers.
What was one such differentiation that you were bringing?
So at the time, the demo I showed was actually, at the time, Windows containers on Windows were not available. So we showed Windows app in Linux, actually.
Okay.
So that was a cool demo. And I mean, that's one thing VCs like as well.
Yeah.
So we showed a unique thing that, hey, you can take a .NET app, which is usually run on Windows. But .NET is open source now. Microsoft has open sourced it. So you can run it on Linux. And better, you can run it in a Linux container and in the future, Windows container. So that was our pitch. That if you could run apps in containers, mm-hmm. then Windows apps, then how do you manage them? How do you do unique things for Windows?
I see. So you actually built a small version of your what would be your idea, and that was helpful for you.
Right, definitely.
Yeah. And so you had the initial idea. You showed it to the venture capitalists and you got some funding. And what was the next step after that?
After that, it was about like building the team and finding the first set of people, core team. So all the people we hired are people either Kiran or I knew, because the core team is absolutely very important. And we like to brag about our team. We are just 8 people right now, and we have 3 PhDs and senior staff from VMware, principal engineer from Microsoft, and very bright team. We like to say that it's A+ team, mm-hmm. which beats A team. So that was the goal. Like as soon as we got the money, first thing was like getting the core team together and getting started on like defining the product mm-hmm. and figuring out. So we wanted to we had an idea of launching it at Docker conference last year in November, and that was our kind of like the deadline. We had about 6 to 9 months. I think we got funding in April, so we had about 9 months or so to execute that. And so we decided that, hey, get the core team, get the product features for that first version and start, get going.
I see. DockerCon was in November of 2015.
Right, last year.
In Europe. Is that where you launched it?
Yes, that's where we launched our company. And our first, we call the, which is the beta version of our product we launched. And that's where we got a lot of inbound requests from customers. And we started doing installs and improved the product. And we've been doing a beta release every month since then and gathering more customers as well. And now we are close to doing GA of our product. And DockerCon this year is in Seattle, in the US. So we're doing, that's in June, and that's where we're doing our GA.
Okay. So, if you're doing the GA now, the beta version, do you make revenue out of the beta version from the customers as well?
Right now, we are not directly asking for payment, but people are trying out beta versions, and there are a few customers who are close to buying it. So post GA, we'll have the contract and everything ready, hopefully announce it at DockerCon as well. And then after the GA version is available, that's what we give them for deployment.
I see. How do you know? I mean, you didn't price it yet, but how are you trying to, how would you figure out what to charge the customers? I'm curious.
Yeah, it's for an early stage startup, in fact, Kiran and I were talking about this today.
Okay.
There is no easy way to come up with the number, but we both have been in the enterprise side quite a bit. So generally we do the annual subscription, and the customers we are targeting are actually, some of them are service providers, meaning that they kind of sell it to their customers or offer it as a service. We are kind of like taking maybe 20 or 30% of what they will make. And that's the way we would structure that.
I see.
Yeah.
How many customers do you have?
So we had done, we had about 200 plus leads, and we did about 50 plus engagements, like talking to them and getting them with the initial calls and all. And we did 20 plus installs. Paying customers, hopefully I can tell you in 2-3 months, in June.
In June.
But
yeah,
we are close to that. One thing that is different from like consumer side of business is that these enterprise side, like each customer is like the average sale price is much higher, and it takes time to get the customer as well.
Yeah.
And that's one thing people are surprised. Oh, don't you have like a million customers?
Absolutely. So I was going to exactly mention that these 20 are enterprise customers. And what is the expected average? When you said the average pay or spend will be higher.
Yeah, so it's called ASP, the average sale price. Uh-huh. And average sale price, it would be good to have like 50 to 100K is what that would be good for us.
I see.
And that
for,
is the,
for you to sustain as a company.
Right. And I think that is the kind of market segment also we are going after. We are going after like a slightly medium to large enterprise businesses.
Uh-huh.
That's where our sweet spot is, where people are already have like VMware or Microsoft software, and we want to sell to those customers.
Yeah. So when you talk about when you talked about your experience in this 1.5 years of running or running ContainerX, right? How would you say is different from the research that you did, whether in companies or in PhDs?
Yeah, totally different. Yeah, this is. I mean, in fact, see, now with 1 year of experience, I'm an expert on this. So a lot of people actually ask me similar kind of questions, and to be honest, I mean, I'm still learning, right? And in fact, I learned a lot from Kiran and talking to many other folks, right? So it's very different. The first thing I would say is that technology, I mean, being a CTO of our company, right? Technology is important, but for a startup to be successful, the business side is a lot more important. Like how the execution is bigger than the idea, right? Mm-hmm. Execution is more important than the idea. I think that, I kind of knew talking to people, but like last 1.5 years, that's like totally solidified. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's all about execution. Like how you decide what to do and how you do it, what team you build, which customers you pick. Everything is about execution. Ideas, of course, matter. And the seed of idea probably is not as important as like the ideas that you grow over time. Mm-hmm. But so that's one thing surprises a lot of people. And it surprised me as well.
Mm-hmm. In spite of knowing it.
I mean, you read about it, you kind of know that execution is more important. Is it 20%, 80%, something like that, right? But then you realize it's like 1% is idea, 99% is execution.
So what is next for ContainerX? You sort of talked about it. Yeah,
for ContainerX, so we want to raise Series A soon, and that's one of our next milestones.
So what you raised so far is seed only.
Yeah, we raised the seed round, 2.7 million. That is public information. Okay. So we raised from General Catalyst and a few other investors, and we're planning to raise Series A. So our milestones are for June. Hopefully, we get our GA, of course, and then funding and a few customers. That's our immediate milestone. And the goals for next year are more about like getting to like what 1 to 10 customers, like the initial set of customers, and figuring out like the funnel, like the sales funnel, right? Marketing and sales funnel, and then getting to a predictable and repeatable revenue, right? As they call it. Mm-hmm. If we can do that, and next year by this time, then we have a business, and then we can scale and hopefully get more money in and more people.
Yeah. I want to actually thank Ramesh Padala, who introduced both of us, and that's why I had the fortune of talking to you. While I'm talking to you, I realized your product is completely enterprise focused. So most people who are interested in doing an interview are having some consumer facing version, right? Which will actually, the interview will help them in a way. So I'm curious to know, why are you doing this? What's your motivation? I'm very thankful that you are, but I'm just curious to know.
Why am I doing the company or the?
No. Why are you spending your Friday evening at 4 with me on Skype when you could be doing many other things?
Yeah, definitely. It's more of like I go to the alumni meets, and sometimes like in the evening or dinner, people ask me questions, and I've written a blog post, just one blog post. I wish I have more time to write more. But it's more of like just getting my thoughts out. It's not like I am an expert. I don't have a lot of, I'm still getting started. But it's just getting my thoughts out, and hopefully it's helpful for someone. And hopefully it's helpful for the people who will see your videos.
What is your blog again?
So I wrote just it's medium.com/@ Ppadala. Ppadala is my username.
I see. Okay. I'll check out that one blog post.
It's just one post. So that was actually about idea versus execution. And I think...
we covered that here.
Yeah. It's one thing that Shaw, even people who've been in the valley for a long time, it shocks people like how much the execution is... how much execution is more important than idea. Mm.
So if someone listening wants to connect with you, what is the best way for them to do so?
Connect with LinkedIn or email. That's the best way. It's pretty easy, I think.
Yeah.
Google Pradeep Padala.
Yeah. I will leave your LinkedIn in the show notes as well. So, okay. Any other thoughts, Pradeep? Any other question that you wish I had asked you, but I didn't?
I mean, this is great. Actually, I'm glad that we got to this discussion. And but I want to ask you, why do you do this?
Why do I do this? So yeah. I started podcasting a year ago. I used to listen to a lot of podcasts in February 2015 onwards, and I was amazed. In half an hour, I can learn so much. And I would rarely, in my favorite podcast, have people from India, from China, and from other parts of the world. And those stories would pump me up so much more. But I would quickly run out of those stories in my favorite podcast. And when I went to the real world, to conferences and meetups, I learned that's not the reality. There are as many immigrant entrepreneurs or more, as native born. And I thought that was not represented well. So I thought I would do it myself.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Yeah. And thanks for having me. And thanks for Ramesh to connect me. I mean, if you haven't noticed, I mean, Ramesh is my cousin.
You have the same last name. Ramesh has been here on the podcast as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's your cousin.
Yeah.
I see. Great. Thank you so much, Pradeep, for joining us today.
Yeah, same here, Rohit. Thanks for connecting. Hope to see you in person sometime.
Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again, and have an amazing day.